When Kalinga's spirit returned to the afterlife and was welcomed home by her father, my current partner, Anne, was also there. That's when I fully realized the strength of the soul connection between Anne and me. I saw that in the afterlife, Anne's spirit and mine were very close. We enjoyed many recreational activities together, and also supported each other individually and in group situations as we prepared for our next incarnation. A later consultation with medium Ruth Phillips revealed other pieces of the jigsaw. I discovered that Anne and I have shared many past lives and relationships, encompassing everything from brothers in arms to lovers. We were often part of the same family, even sisters in one life. Before this incarnation, it was decided that our souls would benefit most if we connected at a later stage in life. That didn't mean to say there weren't issues to face. At first Anne and I experienced difficulties in our current relationship, mainly because I was still grieving over the loss of Judy. But these issues were necessary for us both, as part of our development. My late partner Judy was a great organizer, so it came as no surprise to hear that her spirit had been instrumental in Anne and me meeting again. Deep down I knew that I had been completing several karmic relationships in this lifetime, something that Ruth confirmed. One of my missions in this incarnation is to learn a lot about relationships, romantic, family, in the workplace, and many more. Part of the reason Anne is in my life is to help me round off these lessons with her love and strong support. I was recovering from the loss of Judy when Anne and I first met at a spiritual festival. We soon discovered that we lived only a few blocks away from each other on the outskirts of the city. This was a delightful piece of synchronicity, and I took the opportunity of inviting Anne to be one of my first guests on Radio Out There, which was starting that week on Live Radio. When I discovered she wasn't in a relationship, I invited her out and we went to the theater. We soon realized we had a lot in common and really enjoyed each other's company. In those early days of our friendship, Anne helped me move through the emotional fog of my grief to embrace a new future. As things progressed, we connected at a deep level. When I look at our relationship now, I realize it reflects the love and the intimacy we share as soul companions in the heaven world. As well as our shared spiritual interests, Anne has awakened in me a love of art galleries, particularly in Paris. We are both passionate about travel, and the world regularly beckons us. Anne constantly challenges and encourages me to grow and learn in every possible way. Most important, I have found love with a warm and beautiful soul companion when I thought I would never be truly happy again after Judy's death. As for the role I play in Anne's life, you'll have to ask her. 22. The Council of Elders. Many people fear death because they believe they will be judged for what they have done in their lives and then punished accordingly. We all have to face up to the deeds we've committed in our life when we return to the afterlife, but there is no stern figure sitting on the throne dishing out thunderbolts and one-way directions to some cosmic naughty corner. Instead, we meet with a council of elders who have been observing us, possibly over many lifetimes, and helping us evolve as souls. Far from meting out punishment, the elders help us in a life review to realize what we have achieved and where we have deviated from our path. The look back on our previous life is done in a loving and positive way, but we do get to experience directly the hurt we have caused others so that we can empathize with their pain. After Kalinga had been welcomed back into the world of spirit by her father, she experienced a brief period of healing, in which, she said, she felt as if many hands were placed on her spiritual being. Now re-energized, Kalinga knew she would soon face the Council of Elders, or Ancestors, as she referred to them. She had a very humble attitude to this meeting. "They know when they are ready that I am ready," was her simple acceptance of the situation. The most remarkable thing then happened in the regression. My guidance revealed that the elders had also given their blessing for my current spiritual energy to be present as an observer when Kalinga's spirit met them for her life review. This is a perfect example of how linear time does not exist in the spirit world. The way the Council of Elders appears to a spirit differs with each person. Some spirits see them sitting formally in a big hall or other majestic setting. For others, they may be in very informal surroundings. As I watched from the sidelines, Kalinga found herself in the kind of hut that would be appropriate to a village chief. She was full of respect for that setting, as she was still coming to terms with being back in the afterlife. The Council of Elders welcomed Kalinga home, and she felt reassured and more comfortable, because it had been very easy for her to believe that she was being put on trial in this meeting. The council recognized that Kalinga believed, through her upbringing, that spirits were strongly judged on what they had done in their life and that any wrongdoing would be punished in the afterlife. So the elders assured her that this was not the case, and there was no judgment. There might be special education or training to undergo, but no punishment. Kalinga had a male and three female type energies around her as she met with the council. All the elders addressed her at various times and no one seemed to be in charge. They were pleased with her life's work as a healer, which had atoned in some way for several of her past incarnations as a warrior in which she had taken others' lives. The council told her that she had earned a period of respite after giving so much in her previous life. She could now just rest and be, and when she was ready they would call her and offer her a suitable life in another incarnation. At this time, the Earth's population was very small, so opportunities for a new life were limited and spirits spent longer periods in the afterlife. Spirits had to wait until another body was ready for them and the offer of the right body in appropriate life circumstances was decided by the council. It was made clear to me as I observed the elders that just to have a body, a life, was of no significance, as our time on Earth is about learning and growth for our soul needs. But it is not just on Earth where we can learn and grow. There is much learning that can happen in spirit and on other worlds. Earthly incarnations are just part of a larger opportunity for growth, and we keep returning until we have had every experience we need. Kalinga was happy to know the elders were very pleased with the way she had led her life. They made it clear that she had gotten over a major hurdle in her development by helping others. They emphasized this one was in stark contrast to those past lives as a warrior, which had been more focused on violence and selfishly taking what she wanted from people. Kalinga described her earthly life as a long one in relation to the number of years other people lived in those times. Not surprisingly, she was still very weary after so many years of service, so the elders granted her a long rest in the afterlife before her next incarnation. Her earthly body was worn out, so her spirit needed more healing as well as rest before the next stage of her journey. The elders told her there were many things for her to explore and learn in the world of spirit before she needed to return to Earth. Rest is essential in the afterlife, as it not only restores a spirit's strength but also lets us work with our guides to learn more about ourselves. It was interesting to observe how Kalinga's energy lifted noticeably as she realized she would have the opportunity to enjoy herself now that she had returned to pure spirit form. This was a big change from her life on Earth, which was mainly confined to work. Now she would be completely free to enjoy being in nature, and be with friends and family. She asked if she could assist those who had just returned to the afterlife, as these spirits could be very confused and still hurting from their life experiences, and was later given permission to do so. Everybody in the afterlife is expected to help others in some way, so Kalinga's request to become a healer in spirit was not surprising. While spirits don't have a body, what they bring over into our world still needs healing, Kalinga explained. This was an interesting insight, as people cross over with many things still in their minds, and even though they have left their physical form behind, they can feel as if they still have a body with all its problems and ailments. This is similar to when some people who have had an arm or a leg amputated retain the sensation that it is still there. It is often referred to as a phantom limb. Kalinga revealed she would start this work once her own healing was complete. Kalinga spoke of particularly wanting to help other people who cross over with mental problems. She said that not everything can be fixed in the afterlife, because it may be part of their karma. Interestingly, in one of our sessions conducted several months later, John's group also had some thought-provoking things to say about mental problems. According to Kalinga, certain ailments of the heart or mind stay with a spirit and become part of its next incarnation. Sometimes people need to go back to Earth to face the same experiences again so that they can work out the answers themselves. Kalinga emphasized there is a lot of help offered to us in the spirit world, but it ultimately comes down to our taking responsibility for the things we do. She said, "We are not judged, but we have to answer to our ancestors and to ourselves as to why we do these things. You may never know what results come from your action. But if you do nothing, there will be no result." Mohandas K. Gandhi, 1869-1948. By this time Kalinga had rejoined her soul family, those people with whom she had been bound together in spirit over the ages. "We are all part of a soul family, which is our ultimate support group. We often reincarnate with members of this family, and they can play various roles in our life, from lovers and family to friends and even adversaries. Often we do not encounter other members of our soul family in our earthly existence, as they may be off exploring other opportunities, or they could still be in spirit. However, we do communicate on many occasions in the dream state when our spirit leaves our body and connects with other spirits and guides." Kalinga soon realized that she was the only healer in her soul group, and the others had different duties. However, when they all got together, they talked about family matters and helped one another, much the way many families do on Earth. They were still able to be together as a family in the afterlife, even though their individual growth was at different stages. Kalinga compared this to a family on Earth, of which some members might have important positions while others were still learning, but they were all part of a family unit. When she had completed her initial healing, Kalinga still had a strong need for rest, but was unsure of what to do. She asked her guide, "Where do I go? Where do I rest my head? Do I just lie under a tree?" She wondered whether she would have her own hut, the way she had in the jungle village. Her guide told her that she could create whatever resting place she chose, because in spirit a person is restricted only by the imagination. Yet despite this vastness of choice, Kalinga still yearned for the simplicity of her jungle hut, feeling the need for the familiarity of the forest and her earthly surroundings she loved so much. After her meeting with the council, Kalinga was able to rest and enjoy recreations such as walking, listening to music, and being with other spirits. She could enjoy the full freedom of the spirit world, unlike the restrictions surrounding her last life. Here, there was everything she could wish for. She was able to visit old friends and eventually start work again as a healer, something that gave her a great sense of satisfaction. When she was ready, she would also be able to accompany her guide to the Hall of Akashic Records, where she could access her previous lives. Having access to previous lives can be very illuminating, but it is not just for fun. Spirits have to know why they are going to look at and experience their other lives before being given permission to investigate. This helps them understand where they are now, what they've learned, and how they've progressed. It's a truly amazing opportunity. 23. Helping our Earth family. You don't choose your family. They are God's gift to you, as you are to them. Desmond Tutu. One of the great concerns for those people facing death is the prospect of leaving their loved ones behind when they pass over. For grief-stricken families, the thought of never seeing someone again after they die is distressing. The good news is that our loved ones are still able to contact us from the other side, and that spirits also get to spend time with us on a regular basis. There are enough genuine mediums in the world providing evidence of survival in the afterlife to prove this. Just prior to my finishing this book, Anne and I attended the Arthur Findlay College in the UK, recognized as the preeminent training center in the Western world for mediums. We were privileged to work with some of Britain's most talented mediums as they conducted a week-long residential course. For me, it was like a postgraduate course. Not only did it enhance my own skills as a medium, I was also able to witness firsthand the benefits of contacting the spirit world by some of the best mediums on the planet. When we are able to communicate with someone who has physically disappeared from our life and listen to their story, it removes both fear and doubt about our ongoing life as a soul. You only have to look at the faces of people who have received a message from a spirit to see the positive impact it has. Kalinga was given permission by the ancestors to return to Earth as a spirit to help her family and friends. She was not able to interfere in their lives, but simply being with them and providing love and support were more than enough for her. Sometimes she was able to whisper quietly in their ear or visit them in their dreams to offer help and advice. Even when people ask for help from family or friends in spirit, it is not always possible or even allowed for spirits to provide all the answers they are seeking. Kalinga soon discovered that people cannot be given help from spirit just because they ask. There are many occasions when they must make choices themselves. Permission must be also obtained for spirits to work with people at any stage of their life. They cannot simply decide to slip down to Earth and take action themselves. In addition to help from family and friends in spirit, support is also available from guides, teachers, and elders when the situation is appropriate. Kalinga added, "There are many people in the afterlife who help those on Earth." She went on to say that it is far easier for spirits to connect with people in the dream state, and permission does not always have to be sought for these meetings, because the person's spirit has left the body at this time. These meetings can be of great assistance in our decision-making process, without actually influencing that decision inappropriately. This, however, does not mean that all dreams have a message, according to Kalinga. Some dreams give us help, some have a message, and some connect us with our loved ones. She added, in some dreams, it may just be our mind. Kalinga confirmed that we can all return to the world of spirit in the dream state and connect with our soul family. We are also able to communicate with our guides in times of great stress, but we don't always completely remember this exchange. Sometimes people wake up the next morning not necessarily recollecting their dream, just knowing what they have to do. Kalinga emphasized that not only was she forbidden from interfering in any way in people's lives, but she must also respect their privacy. This is a very important point. Many people express concern about spirits being present at very personal times in their life. The very thought of one of our dear departed parents, an aunt, or a grandmother dropping in or hanging around when we are enjoying intimate moments, for example, is enough to make anyone run screaming from the house. Anyone who senses the unwanted presence of spirits around their house can ask their guide for assistance, or simply ask the spirit to leave. Guides will often arrange for spirits who have not crossed over to be helped to do so. If the problem persists, specialized help, such as a medium, may be needed. 24. Kalinga's next life. As this long and involved regression continued, we moved forward in Kalinga's sojourn in the afterlife to the point where she was preparing for her next incarnation. This new lifetime would take Kalinga into a completely opposing environment, and would provide a very different set of circumstances for her projected experiences. The Council of Elders had offered Kalinga's spirit a life as a trader in a desert region, which was in stark contrast to the jungles of Central America. This time her soul would be given the body of man, whose father was a desert nomad, in what is now known as the Middle East. My guide Amelator confirmed it was in a region we know as Syria, in the early part of the 12th century, just after the First Crusade. The purpose of this lifetime would be to interact with a diverse group of people, and the main lesson would be to understand the range of emotions and experiences that such a mix of societies can provide. As a man in this life, Kalinga would also have to come to terms with the fact that this would not be the gentle, peaceful life she enjoyed in her previous incarnation. During this next incarnation, there would be experiences involving turbulence, greed, and materialism, which would be the complete opposite of those in Kalinga's life. However, this is the whole point of each incarnation. Once we have reached a certain point in our learning, there is no use in going back over old ground, no matter how much we may yearn for the past. Kalinga summed it up succinctly, "We have different lives to experience all that there is, with many temptations and choices placed in front of us." As a young boy in the next life, Kalinga's spirit would also face widespread cruelty, which would allow him to see how others live in such a harsh environment. He would discover that inhumanity is part of humanity, and that all is not peace and love. but he would have the opportunity to bring in the love and peacefulness that he had achieved in his past life as Kalinga to cope with these challenging emotions. During his time on Earth, he would be living in a brutal world, but would have opportunities to improve his life and help others, from the wisdom contained within his soul. He would be placed in a position to understand why people would want to live in this unforgiving manner and, most important, to realize that situations change as we all are offered many choices and opportunities in life. Kalinga's spirit spent many years of Earth time preparing for what she realized was to be a grueling experience in several ways. In the afterlife, much of this planning was done in a group situation, where she had to face various options and role-play potential scenarios, which were then buried deep within the boy's subconscious mind for his benefit in the life to come. Her father's spirit had long since reincarnated, but she was able to work with her brother Lim, the former village chief now back in spirit, who was a member of her soul family. In this new life, however, she would not have direct contact with any of her soul family and would have to undergo this strict test on her own. This life would be an important part of her development and as such more demanding than previous experiences. Whether this young man chose to listen to his inner voice or give in to temptation would be up to him, and would be the whole point of the test. At vulnerable times like this during our lives, we need to pause, think, and listen to that inner wisdom and not make rushed decisions. This is where our deep sense of knowing the best action for our highest benefit comes from. His guides would also be whispering in his ear, along with other spirit helpers, but greed for material possessions would be a huge temptation placed in front of him. This would be an arduous life, but Kalinga's spirit had a long period of rest to prepare for it. There would be many lessons to learn, which may or may not be resolved by the end of this lifetime, potentially creating karmic debt that would have to be carried forward into other incarnations. Fortunately, he would be traveling with some supporting members of adjoining soul groups and would be helped by them at various times. At times he would experience what he would regard as a strange series of events, but would discover that everything has a reason. Quite often, members of our soul family and our support groups incarnate before us and manifest as parents, friends, colleagues, and even enemies, to work with us. Sometimes our worst enemy can be a soul supporter playing out a prearranged role for our mutual benefit. Naturally, we perform the same functions for other people as well. Life contracts often can be very complex, as we will discuss later. Unexpected situations that arise can create a very challenging time in our lives, and even though we may have rehearsed our options in spirit, one decision, good or bad, can affect the lives of many people. It can also create karmic issues that take several lifetimes to work through. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered wife. 25. The lessons continue. The knowledge I gained from my regression to Kalinga's life was overwhelming, and I had much to be grateful for. But my soul energy had a final gift for me, the opportunity to look back and examine the lessons of my next life as a 12th century desert trader. The boy was given the name Arloon. He was born into a Middle Eastern country, and living conditions in these times were described as very harsh. Slavery was accepted as a way of life, but Arloon's father was not wealthy enough to trade in slaves, so instead he ran a successful enterprise dealing in trinkets and whatever he could. Arloon described his father as being essentially a kind man, but he possessed a cruel streak, which apparently was a common trait among people at that time, and had inherited it from his own father. Arloon, too, had this potential for cruelty as part of his genetic makeup, but by exercising his free will he was able to contain this aspect of his background to a great extent as he proceeded through life. Arloon went on to achieve far more success as a trader than his father did, and although he did not trade in slaves, there were several slaves in his household staff. There was no evil intent in keeping people as slaves, it was just the way things were in that society. In fact, Arloon saw it as his right. Unfortunately, every now and then, His inherited cruel streak emerged in the way he treated his slaves as well as other people in his family, such as on those occasions when he wanted to get his own way. To become a successful trader, he learned to be very cunning, so that others would not take advantage of him. Arloon and his family lived in a town that has long since disappeared from the map, but he frequently visited the city of Damascus on his trading ventures. It was here he gave in to the delights and temptations that a big city offered to someone from a small town with money in his purse. Before long, the accumulation of wealth and possessions became more important, and this included being able to purchase his personal slaves and bodyguards. Arloon collected and displayed fine carpets and other possessions in his home so that he could flaunt his wealth and importance to others. He had a big ego and gave in easily to all kinds of enticements that were conveniently placed in his path. My soul energy described Arloon as not a bad man, but just someone of his times in many ways. Survival was a strong focus for him, along with the driving force to be better than other people. Arloon eventually died in his mid-40s, in the same desert in which he was born. He was on a trading mission when he was caught in a wild sandstorm, which wiped out his entire caravan. When Arloon returned to the afterlife, he received a very different reaction to that of his life as Kalinga. The elders, of course, knew all about the temptations he faced, and in his life review they let him experience for himself how other people were affected by some of these choices. Arloon was made to feel their pain and frustrations and was shown how he could have made better choices in life. Feeling ashamed and disappointed with himself, he went back to his soul family, with whom these and other choices were analyzed and discussed in great detail to help everyone in the group in their future lives. Life reviews are not courts of judgment, and often we are our own harshest critic when we remember what we set out to achieve in that lifetime. Although Arloon didn't intentionally hurt his slaves, the elders felt that subconsciously he knew it was inappropriate behavior, because of his previous life as Kalinga and also his intense spiritual preparation in the afterlife. Arloon could have chosen a simpler lifestyle whereby he did not buy slaves or enjoy other temptations, but instead he gave in to his ego. He knew deep down in his soul that this was against his spiritual values, but he allowed himself to be driven by outer circumstances and made poor choices, profiting by others' misery. Arloon realized that his was a life dominated by ego and greed, in which he seemed to ignore basic family values for his own selfish indulgences. Arloon had a long-suffering but argumentative wife who bore him 4 sons, and he also purchased several concubines for his pleasure. Although the keeping of concubines was an accepted part of his society, sadly Arloon favored them over his wife and family. Looking back on this life as Arloon the desert trader, my soul energy said that his lifestyle reflects the choices many people make in the 21st century. It is easy to get swept along by the current of our environment and the social conditions of the day, but it is important that we dig deep within ourselves and listen to our inner knowing. Our past life memories have been submerged at birth to avoid confusion, but are still found in our soul memory. It is important that we make a conscious choice to look inside ourselves before making major decisions. My soul energy said that the information in our subconscious mind has been programmed during our time in the world of spirit. Some people call this their conscience. It is available to us all if we make the effort to listen. The elders told Arloon that he would not have another life on Earth for a long time. There would be ample opportunity to reassess the life just completed, and learn every lesson that was possible from his actions. There was no point in having a cursory examination and then putting his life just lived to one side and asking for another body to be available. There were many issues that needed intense exploration in a life that was self-serving with little thought for others. In his group work, Arloon examined the positive choices that he could have made, and how they would have worked out for him and his retinue. This was a life completely opposite to that of Kalinga, and Arloon realized several future lifetimes would now be necessary to work out the karmic issues he created. If we don't learn from our past mistakes, we have to keep coming back to Earth until we do, and until our karma is balanced. When asked about the human belief in the difference between right and wrong as evidenced by these two lives, the answer I received from my soul energy was simple and direct. There is no right and there is no wrong. It is the experience of how it affects us and how it touches others. There is no judgment in the afterlife. Right and wrong are purely human terms.